Chapter 32. Murphy might not have been officially in charge of special investigations, but I don't think that made much difference to many of the other detectives there. She needed help, and when she called, they came. End of story. For them, at least. For Murphy, it was the beginning of the story. She had to tell a lot of stories around police headquarters. It was part of her job. Oh no, those reports of vampire attacks were the result of hysterical drug-induced hallucinations. Troll? It was a large and ugly man, probably drunk or on drugs. He got away. Investigation ongoing. Everyone buys it, because that's what SI gets paid to do. Explain away the boogeyman. Murphy should be a novelist, she writes so much fiction. We had a big mess here, but Murph and her fellow cops in SI would make it fit in the blanks. Terrorists were hot right now. This report would probably have terrorists in it. Scared religious nuts and terrorists who set off incendiary devices at an apartment building and in her car, and who also doubtless set the device that blew up an entire room at a cheap Southside motel. There weren't any corpses to clean up, just one wounded woman who probably needed to see a shrink more than a jail cell. I debated with myself over whether or not to suggest she add in a bit with a dog. People love dogs. You can never go wrong adding a dog to the story. Right, Mouse? I asked him. Mouse looked unhappily up at me. Thomas had gotten the women and kids clear of the scene and handled what was left of the Scavis agent, while I'd gone to a car wash and cleaned his blood off of my dog with the sprayer. Mouse's fur keeps out just about everything, but when it finally gets wet, it soaks up about 50 gallons and stays that way for a long time. He doesn't like it, and he was apparently feeling petulant about the entire process. Everybody loves a bit with a dog, I said. Mouse exhaled steadily, then shook his head once and laid it back down, politely and definitely ignoring me. I get no respect. I sat on a hospital bench near the emergency room entrance with Mouse pressed up against one of my legs as he lay on the floor, just in case anyone wondered who he was with. It had been a long night, and despite Elaine's incredible hands, my headache had begun to return. I tried to decide whether Cowell's mental whammy or Madrigal and his stupid assault rifle deserved more blame for that. A brawny kid in a brown uniform shirt came up to me the way good security guys do in the Midwest, all friendly and nice, until it's time to not be nice. The wit and wisdom of Patrick Swayze movies lives on. Sorry, mister, he said in a friendly tone, one hand resting congenially on his nightstick. No dogs allowed. Hospital rules. I was tired. If I don't take him out, I said, are you gonna tonfa me to death? He blinked at me. What? Tonfa, I said. Imagine all the meal that isn't getting ground so that you can do your job, all the knives going unsharpened. He smiled, and I could see him classify me as drunk, harmless. He put out one hand in a come-along sort of gesture. Your nightstick there, it's called a tonfa. It was originally a pin that held a millstone or a big round grinding stone in a smithy. It got developed into an improvised weapon by people in Southeast Asia, Okinawa, places like that, where big friendly security types like yourself took away all the real weapons in the interest of public safety. His smile faded a little. Okay, buddy, he put his hand on my shoulder. Mouse opened his eyes and lifted his head. That's all. He didn't growl at the brawny kid. He didn't show his teeth. Like all the most dangerous people I know, he didn't feel the need to make any displays. He just sort of took notice with extreme prejudice. The security kid was smart enough to get the picture and took a quick step back. His hand went from the nightstick to his radio. Even Patrick Swayze needed help sometimes.